Well, good morning. I'm David Jackson from the Bay Area Radio Museum, and we are in the studio at the California Historical Radio Society's KRE studios in Berkeley. Today is Saturday, July 16th, 2011, and we are here today with Mike Cleary and Frank Dill, legendary Frank and Mike of KNBR Radio for many years. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us here
pleasure.
Today. I received a packet of stuff just the other day, and there was an article, Frank and Mike Keep 'em Laughing on KNBR, written by somebody named Isabel Lemon, who I'm not sure if anybody's familiar with. The first paragraph of it reads, "It is 6 a.m., Frank Dill walks into the KNBR studios, puts down his briefcase and thermos, grins hello to fellow show host Mike Cleary, flips open the microphone and says, 'Good morning, this is Frank Dill. How the heck are ya?'" If that was back in 1982, you guys started together in 1979 together. 1979.
I have the head for figures.
Exactly, but started in radio much earlier than that. Oh, I put emphasis on much earlier for no particular reason on that. Frank, if we'll start with you, where were you born and raised?
Born and raised New York City. Moved to Washington, D.C. when I was about 10 years old. I was there when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Went to school later in Arlington, Virginia, high school, and started listening to a guy on the radio named Jim Gibbons who did a morning radio show. And occasionally he would ask a sports question. And if you were the first person to call him with the answer, you got tickets to a Washington Senators baseball game. Okay, this back in the 40s. And I was a sports nut, you know, sports trivia nut. So I used to call in, and I would hear my name on the radio. Our winner is Frank Dill. I got quite excited about that. And I'd go to high school after that. I'd go to school. And other people would say, "Hey, I heard your name on the radio." Well, that got me fascinated with being on the radio. That's about 1948, somewhere in there. And that sort of got me started. The same guy, Jim Gibbons, started a television show with high school kids. 1949, this would have been. Early days of TV. And three high school guys would try to answer sports trivia questions on television. And there was a gimmick to the visual part of it. But anyway, I would win it quite frequently, and I'd come back, and, you know, I'd be the defending champ. And I got to know the people at the station. And when I graduated from high school, I was no longer eligible to be on the show. But I was playing on the team, softball team, for WMAL-TV, Channel 7. And they didn't want to lose me as a player on their softball team. Saturday mornings, Washington Monument grounds, big rivalry with
right
the
right out
other
on the Capitol Mall right there?
Yeah.
Wow,
that's where
wow.
we played softball. So anyway, in order to keep me on the team, they hired me day after I got out of high school as the office boy, page boy. And I was employed in radio, television, one way or the other, for the next 50 years.
Wow.
Crazy.
How long did you stay in Washington before you moved on from that? Did you go into the military after,
yeah.
After starting and...
Went into the Air Force, 1950, 51, somewhere in there, shortly after I started working at WMAL-TV. And I got into the Armed Forces Radio Service. So I was on Clark AFRS, Clark Air Force Base, Philippine Islands, for a couple of years. And when I got out of the Air Force, they took me back to... Park Air Force Base, which is now out in, it's in Pleasanton.
Oh, right.
I think
Park's
it's a
right.
prison now.
Right, yes, exactly.
But at that time, it was a mustering out place, you know.
Oh, really?
And so it was my first experience in California. I thought this would be a nice place to live someday. So it took me another 15 years or so, but I finally got back here.
Now, you went from, you were mustered out and ended up back in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah. Went home to my parents' house because I was like 23 years old or something. And tried to get a job in radio and TV because over in the Philippines, they kept telling me, "Hey, you're great, man. You're going to have a great career." I got home and I applied for radio jobs all over the place, couldn't get a job. Auditioned for a guy in Alexandria, Virginia. He told me I had to sell insurance.
Wow.
And, you know, I can hear some of those recordings from those days, and I understand what the guy was talking
sure.
about.
Sure, sure.
He was right, probably. But anyway, finally, one of the guys that was on that softball team with me before I went in the Air Force was now running a television station in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay.
And he heard I was out of the Air Force, and he called me. He said, hey, why don't you come down here and do some sports on television? I said, heck of a deal. I mean, television was so young, so new. It was easy. So I used to do a sports show, you know, nightly sports report on Channel 17, UHF station, Little Rock, Arkansas. And I only worked there 3 months because Channel 4, KARK-TV, was just going on the air for the first time. And lo and behold, a couple of guys who used to be on that same softball team, they came down to run Channel 4.
Wow.
And they saw me on Channel 17. They said, hey, you ought to come over here. We got a bigger station, you know, pay a little more
and probably
money.
Viewers, too.
So I go to the guy who brought me to Arkansas, and I say, hey, you know, they're offering me more money. He said, take it. So I worked at Channel 4. And then I only stayed there about 6 months because, oh, this gets complicated. But the guy that hired me originally to come to Arkansas, that I quit after 3 months, he went to Buffalo, New York, and he was running Channel 2 in Buffalo. And he said, why don't you come up here and do sports on television? So I was about to get married, and I said to my fiance, whom I met in Little Rock, I said, hey, I have to go to Buffalo to take this job. This new station's going on the air, and I know we're not getting married until October, but they need me there August 1st or August 15th. So I'll go get the job, and I'll come back in October, and we'll get married. And she said, you ain't leaving this town without me. So we got married on August 1st, and I started working August 15th. And then 1963, 9 years later, I came to San Francisco at KNBR. That's my whole life story.
That's up to that point. Now, around that same date, you're a Midwestern boy out in California around that same time, or a little bit earlier?
I blossomed years later.
Mike, where are you from originally?
Chicago.
From Chicago.
Chicago.
Midwestern boy.
Yeah.
And you got to California. You grew up in Chicago and spent your youth in the Chicagoland area?
Yeah, and you came about radio through sports. I came about it through being an altar boy, and I liked performing. And I thought, you know, that's, if you think about it,
get to put an altar boy.
Well, you get to put a costume on.
Play dress up.
You get to remember lines, and you get to speak a foreign language.
Latin comes in handy in broadcasting. Yeah.
Well, it did come in handy because when I joined the Army, I was put in the branch Army Security Agency, and we were headed to Boston for assignment, and they needed some people to fill the bus going to the Presidio of Monterey.
Okay.
And because of my Latin background and being in the seminary, I aced the language test and ended up at the school learning Russian. And so I became a Russian interpreter and found out that there was no real big call for those that kind of profession in those days. And got out of the Army in Petaluma and started the radio.
Okay, backtrack for just a moment. There was a chance you could have been Father Mike Cleary?
I could have been Father Michael Cleary.
Wow.
Yes, yes. And I would have taken on the accent as well.
As well.
Oh,
sure.
Indeed, yeah, yeah.
So you're still in the Army and you're in the Bay Area?
I'm in the North Bay?
I've got
3 or 4 months left, and I'm looking for a part-time job in Petaluma, California. And I got a job as a janitor at KTOB,
Top of the Bay
Radio. And one thing led to another. One day the Dairy Council was meeting. They needed somebody to tape record it. They said, here's what you do. You plug it in, you put the tape on it. And so in increments, they added a little more duty. And then I found myself doing remote broadcasts from country western bars. And I had about six of them in a week. So that was six times six. That's my salary, $6 a show.
No.
And whatever beer bottle was full that was thrown at me from the
if there was anything left inside it.
Yeah. And then did, you know, a top 10 show from the local record store. And by the time I got out of the Army, the only valid experience I had was radio. And that's kicked around to top 40 radio in Hawaii and Sacramento, San Diego. And in 1966, a fellow by the name of Jim Washburn died at KYA, and Tony Bigg, who was working there, a fellow alum from KRLY in Sacramento,
both in Sacramento,
told Clint Churchill, the owner-manager, look, there's a guy named Mike Clary who's really bad at Top 40 radio, but he will fit in here because he's not a screamer. And so I ended up coming to San Francisco via KYA.
Now, is it true that you walked in and they looked at how tall you were? Is that a true story?
No,
is that a
poker fall? Absolute true story. I went in to see Clint Churchill. Never was invited to sit down. He said, when can you start? He asked me how tall I was. I said, 6'2". And he said, when can you start? And I was hired because they had a basketball.
Exactly. They needed a point guard.
And he didn't understand that while most boys at 6'2 were playing basketball, I was serving mass. See? And you can't put the two of them together. So he didn't know that I was really not a very good basketball player. But they had a great team that played for charity and raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, actually, in those days.
Had a pretty good air staff at the radio station to begin with. Had a fairly all-star team. You were there during the Gene Nelson?
Gene Nelson, Ed Heider.
Tony Bigg, of course.
Yeah, West Syracuse.
Yeah.
And Gene was the morning man. Johnny Holiday was in the afternoon. Tony was working in the evenings. Tommy Saunders was there. And then I just really wanted to break out, so I went over to KCBS and did some weekend work as a talk show host. And from there, I got a job as Sergeant Sacto.
Not mock Sergeant Sacto,
no,
because for
I
a
won't.
Generation of us kids, it was Channel 44 and
44.
Right there and everything else. And
and it was a UHF station that just went on the air. Mm-hmm. And they had this programming philosophy of get the kids first and then you'll get the parents. So it was basically, I was a cartoon jockey from 3 in the afternoon until 6 in the evening. And Carter, at the time, Carter B. Smith, was hosting the movie at 7 o'clock that was live.
And Sherwood actually had a show on there at some point, too. So why everybody they could get and drag over to 420 Taylor Street.
Sherwood actually was on the air there, and I forget how it all worked technically, but he didn't. It wasn't television. It was actually, you could listen to him on
radio.
On the audio side of Channel 4.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, so now we're in the 1960s. You've arrived in San Francisco. Remember, they had a big, giant cutout dill pickle, which...
Oh, yeah.
Great. I get
one. One of the great promotions of all time.
It was terrific.
Yeah, was... when I came to KNBR 1963, somebody had that bright idea they should have a dill pickle, you know, to celebrate Frank Dill. And then somebody decided, they would make up these little dill pickles, and you could squeeze them and they would go beep, you know.
You have one? You still have one?
And
do
I don't know that
one?
I have one, but
he's got boxes.
Then I did
them.
A little thing on the radio, and I, you know, about drive time in the morning, tension when you're driving your car.
Right.
You should relieve tension by reaching in the glove compartment and squeezing your pickle. So we made a, you know, we made a little thing out of it.
Don't do that in front of somebody like me. You know the lines that suddenly start running through your head?
I know it's crazy. Crazy, crazy. But then, you know, we did it. We thought that was terrific. Anyway, I met Mike Clary. I met Mike Clary actually because of television.
Yep. You were doing Channel 4 at the time, or Channel 5 at the time?
5. I was first on 5. Channel 5, then I went to Channel 4.
Right.
And I was doing a weekend teen show called Tempo.
Yeah. I was doing sports. He's doing a teen show. I go to Phoenix spring training, Giants. I'm down there doing interviews with people like Willie Mays and Willie McCovey and that era. And I, they told me there was a guy that did a teenage show who would meet me there and would I help him get a couple of interviews for his teenage show. So here's Mike Clary comes up to me down there. I had just tried to interview.
And of course, he's a big-time broadcaster.
Sure.
To me,
mm-hmm.
Just, he's been, you know, he's been in San Francisco since the Gold Rush days, and I was in awe of him.
Okay, so I've just finished.
Do you notice how that one went? Yeah, yeah. But anyway,
I've just finished trying to do an interview with a ball player that will go unnamed. But I'm interviewing the guy. I can't understand a word he's saying. I mean, he's speaking English, but I can't understand a word he's saying. So I cut that interview short, and here comes Mike Clary, who wants a little help for some interviews, so I fix him up with the same guy. I said, I got a great interview for you. Here, you take this one. Remember that?
Oh, I sure do. Yeah, I do.
How did your interview with Tito Fuentes go?
Well, actually, it went very well because, obviously, he was Catholic, and so we both spoke Latin. But the funny thing was, I think we took you to dinner.
Yeah, you did. You were very nice of you.
And I took him to the airport.
Yeah.
And then that was the last I saw of Frank. And that's the last he saw of me. And I remember you went home and you told me later that you said to Mary, this guy was so nice to me. What the hell does he want?
Yeah. You were very nice to me. Yeah. But then I didn't see you for several years, I guess.
Yeah, and I signed on with KNBR in 1970. And
originally as fill-in, and I believe that first show was that the Ed Brady Bandstand?
Well, you know, in those years, there was such a thing called Summer Relief.
Yeah.
And you could bounce around radio stations. I did Summer Relief at KSFO 1 year, and I got a Summer Relief job at KNBR, and then ended up full-time doing middays from 10 to 3. And so I followed Frank.
So he would come in early.
And it was, I think it was in 1974, I was allowed to call him by his first name.
But still no eye contact?
Yeah.
Well, he would come in. I was on until 10 o'clock. He was on 10 to 2. I was 6 to 10. And he started coming in about 9. Yeah. And he'd sit down across from me and eat his breakfast or whatever while I'm doing the rest of my show. And then he started kibitzing with me on the air, and we were having a lot of fun with it. And it turned out that it seemed to be pretty popular with the people that were listening because we were just two guys kibitzing.
Yeah.
And eventually that led to our teaming up and doing the morning show. And when they asked me about teaming up with Mike, I must tell you, and I don't know whether you know this or not.
Oh, break my heart.
When they asked me, they said, you know, you guys sound pretty good between 9 and 10. Why don't you do the whole show together? I said, wait a minute. This is my show, you know, 6 to 10. And now I team up with this guy. If it doesn't work, you know, what happens? They said, give it a 6-month try. If you don't like it, he goes back to 10 to 2.
Or out the door.
So I said, let's give it a try. And then that lasted for the next 15 years.
Yeah,
or so.
10 years,
yeah,
from there.
Yeah. And it, you know, and it, I think there was one morning where I was running late, and I thought, I called you.
Oh, yeah.
I called him, and I said, look, I got an idea here. I got a name in my head. Just put me on the air with you. And he did, and I said, yes, Mr. Dill, this is Tom Haggerty of the Ace Calendar Company.
That's right.
And we started a character.
That was before we
joined. Was Tom Haggerty the first?
Yes.
Tom Haggerty was the first.
Yeah. Okay. And that was before we went on the air.
Yeah. And so Tom Haggerty would call, and he obviously made calendars that were absolutely ridiculous and mistake-laden, and there would be 7 Saturdays in 1 month. But Isabel Lemon, bless her heart, was able to expand on that calendar idea and create promotions that were just absolutely astonishing.
And we finally started making calendars.
Yeah, we started making calendars.
So we had a Rusty Scupper t-shirt sitting out there. I think it was Rusty Scupper put them out each year.
Right.
Each year was, and Tom Haggerty, of course, was portrayed by?
My father.
And
My father,
exactly.
Tom. Yeah. My dad loved being Tom Haggerty. He just absolutely loved it. And then I think we just started adding characters. And
yeah, well, the thing is, Mike didn't know until he started doing this that he could do character voices. I think I'm correct on that.
Yeah, and in fact, at the time, because I know even my wife says it's ridiculous, I'm basically shy. And do you remember, I would not stay in the studio with you.
I know.
If I did a character, I would go out of the studio and into our office and I'd call him.
He'd call me on the
phone.
Actually
step outside to do,
do
Jack Benny from Heaven.
I wouldn't do it in front of him.
I'll be darned.
That's
so
right.
You know, and it took a long time. It took a couple of years, I think, didn't it?
And by the time, by this time, he's doing like 20 or 30 different character voices.
Still.
And this is when we're doing the show together. And he's funny. I mean, I'm laughing my tail off, you know, because I think he's very, very funny. And so his job became coming to work in the morning and making his best friend laugh.
Yeah.
That was his job.
And I loved that job.
And finally, we got him to the point where he would actually sit next to me and use a fake telephone.
Yeah.
Oh, and just...
do his voices.
Well, either do a character in the studio or use this fake phone.
Yeah.
But it took a while to do that. It took a while to do it. And it was great fun. Oh, Mike Peckner's here. We're looking at him through the
glass. Yeah. Because there's a window here, I've been waving at people. Ben Fong Torres just went by.
As the parade goes by, you mentioned Isabel's name again, and she was responsible for getting you a parade, the Good Times Parade.
Isabel
and so many other things like that. And so Isabel many great did everything. Over
Isabel was the franchise.
She was and still is fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isabel Lemon would hear us sometimes nibbling at something on the air, an idea. And then she would come rushing in, and we kidded around about having a parade. Mm-hmm. She came rushing in and said, let's really organize this. And the next thing you know, we've got 21 cities who want to have our parade.
Our parade.
In other words, they're calling in saying, well, have your parade here. You know, have your parade. And we picked Pleasanton, finally, because they knew how to put on parades out there, you know, the fair that's out there and so on. Anyway, she would take this ball and run with it. And whereas we started with an idea we thought might be a couple of people, a couple of Boy Scouts, and maybe a couple of people with harmonicas would be our band, and it would be a small parade through Golden Gate Park, it ended up we had like 230 marching units and so on, and it was a big extravaganza.
A parade.
They put Frank on this glorious float with beautiful women fanning him, and they put me on a horse.
Yeah.
A 12-year-old girl's horse. And they put me in a costume that, because remember, we were owned by NBC. KNBR was an NBC station. So from the NBC studios in Southern California, they sent up, I was a rhinestone cowboy.
Yes.
And they sent up an outfit that at one time had been worn by Roy Clark, and at another time by Bing Crosby. So you can tell they can take it in and take it out. And of course, I went for one horseback ride. And I'm from Chicago. You know, I mean, the only horses you see are on the Budweiser
camp. Uh-huh.
And so during the parade, I said, don't worry, I'm fine. The horse, who is supposed to be trained to, I guess, go to the bathroom and walk at the same time, wouldn't. And in front of the reviewing stand, he came to a complete dead stop.
Yep.
And I'm waving to people, and they are on the floor laughing. And I'm figuring it's my outfit. Little do I know, the horse has decided to take a rest.
But you get a standing ovation.
But now he won't move. I can't get him to go.
No, he already went.
And the 12-year-old girl had to come out and take the horse by the reins and lead me for the rest of the parade.
Wow.
Meantime, he's on a float with beautiful veiled women.
Yes.
It was, that was...
I was Mr. Macho. I'll
never forgive you for that.
Yeah, so if I throw out a name like Angie Dickinson, do I have to say anything more than that?
Angie Dickinson.
Angie Dickinson, or...
Yeah, well, I used to claim, you know, on the air that I was secretly in love with Angie Dickinson and so on and so forth, and it was kind of a running gag, although, you know...
I'm waiting for her autobiography.
But then one day I'm on the air, and I said, I'm finished with Angie Dickinson, because I saw Sally Field last night on the Oscars show. So from now on, forget it, Angie. From now on, I'm for Sally.
Nobody well, does that to Angie.
A San Francisco cop calls me and says, hey, you know, Angie's in town. I said, what? I had never met her. He said, yeah, she's shooting a movie, and she has a, you know, one of these motorhome places out in Golden Gate Park. I'm going to tell her what you said. So I get a call a little later, and it's Angie Dickinson. And she said, I understand that you dumped me and that you're now going for Sally Field. She said, I want you to, when you get off the air, I want you to come out here and see me. You know where I am. So I went out. And there's a cop guarding her door.
Dennis Shard.
Huh?
Dennis Shard.
Yeah, Dennis Shard. Dennis Shard became a regular at KNBR.
Yeah, he sure did.
He attended all of it. Yeah. This first time I met him. Anyway, Angie opens the door of the dressing room, looks down at me, you know, it's like three steps to go up, puts her hands on her hips and says, Sally Field. Come on in here. And so I spent the next couple of hours with Angie. And that started a long time thing.
Ongoing.
Right. And she would call us.
Yeah, she'd call regularly.
Yeah, she'd call the radio. You know, us
I had to leave the studio.
Or we would call her. Once there was, we had a report one morning of an earthquake down in
LA. Oh, that's right, yeah.
So we said, let's call Angie, see if she felt the earthquake. And just like that, she's on the air with us. 7 a.m. or something, and she said, oh, was that an earthquake? I was dreaming of you, Frank. But she was a great sport. She was terrific.
Was the best prank...
I guess you're not going to ask me about me and Phyllis Diller, are you?
That was in her autobiography.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
Was the best prank ever pulled, was that the marching band? Was there
the marching a band?
Marching band outside... was it in Hawaii?
Oh, I married in 1982. And Marianne and I actually went to Frank's condo in Maui. And,
just for your honeymoon.
For our honeymoon. And
I didn't charge him either.
Nice.
No, you didn't. And the first morning we were there, about 7:30, it was drizzling. And we woke up to... California, here I come.
A high school band.
High school band. And I thought, what is this? And I opened, we're on the top floor, and there's a deck, a veranda, and I looked down, and there is the Maui High School Marching Band, or a contingent of it. Mm-hmm. And they're playing basically the only song that has a California
theme to it.
So they keep playing it over and over again. Where Frank's condo is located, there are not only tourists, vacationers, but there are people who live there year-round.
Yes.
So this was not met.
Wasn't a big thing from the neighborhood.
It wasn't welcome. And because it's drizzling, and they're out there, I thought, well, gotta bring them in, you know. So I go downstairs, and we welcome them in. And, of course, the entire horn section were four 350-pound Samoan. So they took up most of the living room, and they were all great kids. They were just marvelous kids. And somehow you linked it up with the morning man at the Maui radio station, and through the Maui radio station, I was able to connect up with Frank. And
we put it all on the air.
Wow. We put it all on the air, and I believe a donation was made to the...
I had to arrange this thing.
Is that out of pocket or out of... Wires.
Well, you had to bust the whole band around from the other side of the island. So, you know, it cost a few bucks, but it was worth it. Yeah.
We've got an event starting in about 5 minutes, I think. So we're wrapping. Can we take just one more thing? 15 years together, mm-hmm. and pretty good years all in all.
Oh, my heavens! Great
years. Yeah. He made me laugh a lot.
Yeah, as soon as we started, we were there at 4 a.m, right? 4:30.
Yeah.
Because we're getting on the air at 5:30, and so that's your Monday through Friday. You really you get close, and. The fun of it was you get to laugh.
And the amazing...
And you get a paycheck for laughing.
And the amazing part is that we still like each other.
Yeah.
That's something.
And even to this day, when I go to bed at night with Mary, I kiss Mary Ann, she says, good night, Frank and Mike.
And on that note, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Appreciate it. And we're wrapped.